Hello, 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 and welcome to another episode of Break the Cycle with me, your host, Joshua Smith. Guys, it's been a long time since we've done a show. I understand that. Christmas came around. I know you guys were all busy. I was really busy as well. Then my internet went down for about a week and 3 days. So that was very hard to do live streams with a crappy internet. Something chewed through our internet connection. CenturyLink decided to install our cable above ground like idiots, and probably a chipmunk or something chewed through right before the snow. And then trying to get one of those people out to your house to fix the stuff is just absolutely a mess. So I appreciate you guys being here. It's a new year, new shows. I'm going to do it real big this year. We're going to try to outdo how many episodes we did last year because it was so much fun for me. And I love hanging out with you guys. I love hanging out with all my great guests. And I can't appreciate you. Tell you guys how much I appreciate you enough for supporting the show. This is episode 143. I started last March, I believe. March 3rd was my first show, and since then we've done 140. We did 142 shows in 2021, and we're gonna outdo that in 2022. I promise you guys. But we got a great show for you tonight. Let's start off with some sponsors, as per the usual. Of course, we have TopLobster.com, the man, the myth, the legend, my good friend and partner on Break the Cycle, where you can get this great fuck around and find out Lady Liberty hoodie that you see me wearing today by going to TopLobster.com and using BTC at checkout for a 10% discount, or you could join the Patreon, subscribe star, or become a member of my YouTube channel under all of my videos by hitting the join link, where you can get into a private Discord server with a lot of the wonderful people that you see in my chats all the time, where you can also get all of Top Lobster's brand new gear up to 2 weeks before it goes to the general public at like a 30% discount. So if you're one of the smaller tiered patrons, if you're buying Top Lobster gear, it's free. I mean, it's free for you to be a patron if you're buying Top Lobster gear. So cool stuff, definitely worth it. I promise you, you won't be disappointed. And of course, executive producers of the show, anthemplanning.com, for all your emergency and crisis planning needs. Check them out today. See what they can do for your business, home, or personal life. They're doing a wonderful job that the government has historically sucked at, much cheaper and much more efficiently. Seriously, if you guys own a business, go check them out today. Wonderful people from Delaware. They have been wonderful to my show and my family. And so please go see what they can do for you if you're a business owner. I promise you, you will not be disappointed using their services. I know some other listeners have been working with them, and they are super appreciative of all their great work. I promise you, it's good stuff. Good stuff. Guys, got a great show for you tonight. Libertarian running for U.S. Senate out of Florida. He was something that a lot of libertarians don't get elected in Florida a few years ago. He's been following me, and I've been following him for a long time. He's awesome. He is Mr. Dennis Mizegoy. Hey, sure. How are you doing tonight?
Doing good on you, man. Thank you again for having me on, brother.
Yeah, of course, man. I'm stoked to have you. I'm glad to be getting back to shows, get back into the routine. You know, it's hard. It's hard when you take a bunch of time off from doing a nightly show, and then you're like, Oh, man, I got to go downstairs into the basement and do the show again. And I was really excited to get down here, and I'm glad to have you. You're my first show of the new year, man.
Yeah, no, I'm stoked, man. It's a nice way to start off first week of the new year, first day of the first week, man.
Yeah.
So I'm honored. It's a privilege. And, you know, man, I've always respected a lot of the work you were always doing, you know, back when you were running for chair both times, going back to the first time, you were everywhere and all over the place and talking with people. And that always left an impression with me. So, and I know how it is when you're doing a lot of work, or you're doing something, you have a great routine, and then you break off that routine, especially with the holidays, whatever, man. It's takes the extra effort to get back into it, but it's good.
Yeah, it's wild, man. We're, you know, there's a lot of hubbaloo around the elections again for the LNC, and I'm just used to that. You know what I mean? I dealt with it for 4 years straight. Now it's kind of like it's a different side that's kind of going at me now, which is a little weird for me, because you know these were the people who supported me for a long time. But it's also weird getting back into that, because I took some time off. You know, when I was doing my national chair campaigns, it was like basically never stopped, right? Like I started traveling in 2017 and I didn't stop till 2020. I mean, it was like literally the whole time I was just going to state to state to state to state to state. And then in back in 2020, and look, this is the first time you guys are going to get to drink at Break the Cycle for the new year. Over 2020, I went from having no kids in my home to having 7 children in my home in 1 year. And it really, or at 2020 into 2021. So I had to take a break and kind of get some things figured out and get situated and make sure that we had everything we needed and the kids were doing the right things. You know, we had to get some therapy going. We had to get some sports started. We had to get some kids into school that hadn't been to school for a long time. We had 2 babies in that time. You know, my wonderful son Mateo, who just turned 1 on New Year's Eve, and then of course my granddaughter, who was born March 14th, so her 1-year-old birthday is coming up soon. And so it was an adjustment period, man. You know, and so it was.
Yeah, I would think so, man. Most of us do that like one at a time.
Yeah, it was. So, yeah, I did it all 1 year, man, and it was a big adjustment period. I needed some time away from just about everything to kind of get it figured out. And now I'm stepping back into that campaign role. I've already got Florida booked. I'll be coming to Florida for the state convention there, which I've only missed one since 2017. I've only missed one state convention. It was last year because I was getting my shit together. And so I think this will be my fourth since 2017, my fourth Florida state convention. Looking forward to that. I'll be in Atlanta in 2 weeks, right outside Atlanta and Douglasville for the Georgia state convention. I know I'll be in Missouri, Michigan, Nebraska, Minnesota, and some others, you know, but those are all driving distance for me now that I live in the middle of the country.
You know, that's true, man.
It used to be, I used to have to fly out from the West Coast everywhere I went. It was like, I had to fly everywhere, you know?
Yeah.
So,
no, and that's gotta be something where it's like, you know, what I was always used to living in Miami was the fact that everything else was so far, like to drive to get out of the state, you got to go 6 hours, you know, basically, even if you just go straight north from there versus, you know, when I lived for a very short time in Maryland, just outside of DC, sure. Where there you drive like an hour or so in any different direction, you get into 1 or 2 states already. You know, it's just different when you're in these other parts of the country. So I imagine that in California a little bit as well. So
yeah, it was really wild, man. Well, and you know, when I started in the 2017, when I started the 2018 campaign, I was actually in Oregon. I was living in Oregon. So it was still West Coast, but I was flying out of Oregon. Everywhere I went was a minimum 5 hours of flying. You know what I mean? It's just how it was, dude. But now it's much easier now that I can drive to all these middle states, you know.
Good trade off.
Yeah, but so let's talk about you're running for U.S. Senate. That's a huge deal, man. I mean, I don't think people understand a U.S. Senate campaign is essentially the biggest campaign you can run outside of the executive branch. I mean, that's true. That's how it is. But let's talk about your journey to libertarianism. You're running as a libertarian. We know it's hard to win as a libertarian. I think the best results we've ever gotten was Ricky Dale Harrington in Arkansas last go round. He got about 37% of the vote running for U.S. Senate. Yep. But how did you come to libertarianism and then the party, man?
You know, libertarianism, I mean, I think I always, growing up, you know, coming from the Cuban-American background in South Florida, you know, just what you come from in that community, you kind of skew already with an antagonistic view towards bigger government. But what you typically do is you just end up voting Republican. And that's what I did, at least for the first couple election cycles when I became old enough to vote. That was the first 8 years of, well, the 8 years of Bush, where we had 6 years of Republicans controlling both houses of Congress and the White House. So no excuses for everything that went on then. And then I heard Ron Paul, man, like a lot of us, is a life-changing message. It was the first candidate I ever donated to. It was the first one to really kind of get me, you know, thinking more and taking it seriously and really, really getting some kind of active and thoughtful about politics. I even registered Republican to be able to vote in the 2012 primaries. I had been NPA up until that point. And, you know, after that didn't work out, I was just kind of down about it and kind of took my head out of politics for a few years. And as we were kind of getting closer to the 2016 cycle, I said, you know, this stuff is happening again. I can't just kind of sit here and be, what's the word I'm looking for? Just apathetic about it anymore. You know, I know too much. I understand everything wrong that's going on, or at least enough of what's wrong going on. Maybe I probably don't understand everything that's going on. There's enough secrets and enough shady business out there that I don't think any of us really knows everything terrible that's going on, but we know enough and we know everything that's wrong with the system because we kind of have this framework and we understand all these aspects of how individual rights are violated, of how the monetary system is kind of undermining everything, of how bad the foreign policy is, the loss of innocent life, the suffering, all of this stuff. And just what do you do once you know that? I always kind of go back to that quote about, you know, what do you do in the face of evil and recognizing this stuff? So I decided, you know what, let me at least get active in the party, go find it. I started getting active in the party locally in Miami-Dade County in like around the end of 2015. In 2016, I was encouraged. We were something we were trying to push, something you know about in South Florida, what ended up going statewide as Operation First Step. Started in Miami-Dade County back when Marcos Miralles, he was vice chair there before he got elected as a state chair. We called it Operation CDD over there, which was this kind of focus on let's get elected to the lowest local level possible. At the same time, I had some interesting stuff going on in my community. I happen to live in a community development district. It's a kind of special taxing district. The one I lived in was pretty small. And it's something that exists in Florida. But so we saw it as an opportunity. The seats were coming up for the first time to be on the ballot. And I ran against, I guess, technically an incumbent. He was an appointee because these seats hadn't gotten onto the ballot yet. There's a process for it. But I won the election with 63% of the vote, and a very interesting experience. Really in two halves, but this was, like I said, my journey to libertarianism. Listening to the Ron Paul message and just kind of waking up. At that point, I had already voted in the general elections libertarian, even though, you know, you can say whatever you want about the candidates that were there, but it's important to reject the two-party system as much as we can, recognizing, at least from my perspective, the irredeemability of it.
Sure.
And the need to take action. But I got elected locally, had an opportunity to do some good things. Not at first. The first 2 years I was on the board, it's what I refer to myself as the Ron Paul experience. I lost every single vote on the board. I lost, you know, every contentious vote, let me say. Every contentious vote, I lost 4-1 or 3-1, depending on how many people showed up for the meeting. Every motion I made, except for, you know, approving meeting minutes or adjourning a meeting, everything else I did died for lack of a second.
Sure.
It was a rough first 2 years. And the 2018 midterms, I got a little turnover on the board. It wasn't other libertarians, but it was at least people I could work with in the community who got inspired enough to kind of get active, and we were able to do some things. We took meetings that were in the middle of the day at 11:30 in the morning on a weekday, on a workday, like 30 miles away from the district. And we brought them, you know, into the evening, a couple miles outside of the district. The district was purely residential, so we didn't have any place to meet there, but we put it close by. We put it in the evenings where regular working people could come out and participate. And, we saved some money. We got to can a few unpopular projects, save some money, try to do that. And even down to the end, on one of my second to last meeting, I got to manage to talk down some folks from projects that just weren't really popular with all the people they were going to affect, and be able to do something good there. So I spent a little over 4 years in that seat. At the same time, working in the LP in Miami-Dade County, was the treasurer there for a few years. Spent also one of the years, I think this was going into the 2019 state convention. I was on the state platform committee, so we redid the state platform. I know they've probably tweaked a few things since then, but we did like an overhaul of the state platform in it, and the fact that the whole thing went through
2019 was that Tampa.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, it was a Tampa convention.
Yeah, that was a fun one.
Yeah, I think you were out there for that one.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I was there. Yeah. Yeah. For sure. That was the one.
I think you were there.
That was the one I was out. Everybody was like inside, and I just like meandered outside because the convention was right next to the pool, and then I was like, you know what? I think I'm going to get in this pool, and then I was just floating around the pool drinking because I wasn't like I don't think I was campaigning yet. Maybe I was, mm-hmm. But that's the one that I hosted the panel, the Mises panel with Walter Block, Jeff Deist, and Tom Woods. And I was the moderator of that panel. And I'm going, why the fuck? Why am I up here right now? This is ridiculous. These people are way. I was like, I can't even come up with questions smart enough for these guys. You know what I mean? It was wild, dude. Yeah, dude, I think you've done a lot of great work, and like I said, you're one of the libertarians that has done something that most libertarians haven't. You've been elected, which is huge, you know. And you started small, and that was kind of the spirit or the essence of Operation First Step, right?
Yeah. No, it was all about, the first step is, see where we can get people started, get people elected into local office. Where do we have opportunities? So we looked at, obviously, it's going to be particularly in Miami-Dade County where we really, really started it. Almost everything is nonpartisan, local offices, but you look for stuff with small districts, things that maybe not be contested at all, or even if they're contested, like in my case, it was contested, but it's still within reach, within the kind of effort we can put forth. Obviously, the bigger you go, the more difficult it is. But that was part of the idea. And then again, but it's just a first step. That's not the end goal. It's the first step. The first step is get some people elected, get people on one side, understanding how to do some of these things as far as campaigning and building stuff up. On the other side, getting people experience, running for and serving in public office. Because at the end of the day, to be able to compete at a higher level, you got to build kind of a pipeline of candidates. You can't just say, it's kind of what we do, and it's unfortunate because everybody who's not like a big party retread, unfortunately, is somebody who has no experience in doing any of this stuff. Usually, like the people we put at the top of the ticket, and no offense to those people, I like those people, and I vote for those people, and I'll probably vote for any one of them that makes it through the process, through the party, to be the Libertarian Party candidate in 2024. But I think there's certainly value. Obviously, Donald Trump was an aberration in a multitude of ways. But realistically, if we want to compete at higher levels, we need to build up a pipeline of candidates. And that was part of the idea as well, was to kind of start people off in a place what was accessible. And then hopefully over time, we would be able to have people ready to take it to the next level. A better example of that would be like probably Martha, who she's elected on community council over there, and now she's running for county commission. So, we're hopeful and try to get people, like I say, just through that process as much as we can. Obviously, it's a question of who takes to it, but that's the idea. And it's a first step. Nothing is going to happen overnight. And it's something I say, look, even if I get elected as a libertarian, first libertarian in the U.S. Senate, even if every libertarian who is running for federal office, every libertarian who was running in 2022 got elected either to the U.S. House or the U.S. Senate, we would still be this tiny minority and would have next to no power to get anything done.
Right.
But it's the first step. It is, it's the first step to breaking the cycle.
Right. Right.
It's something that I talk about and I try to emphasize with folks about what's going on today. We look at the insanity with COVID over the last 2 years. We look at it and I'm hopeful that mass noncompliance, even amongst the people who've helped push this, are starting to get tired. I'm hopeful that mass compliance is going to squash this thing and it's going to get back close enough to normal or fully normal. But the question is, if we leave the same people in power, if you keep exactly the same groups of people in power, what are they going to do the next time they find something to scare us with?
Right.
They're not going to back off from this. They're just going to keep doing the same thing. The TSA didn't go away. Homeland Security didn't go away. Something I tried to beat a drum on recently, in part because the likeliest two big party candidates for the same Senate seat, the incumbent and Congresswoman Demings, they both voted for the NDAA. We're increasing military spending by like another 5%. We're over three-quarters of $1 trillion. And this is after ending the longest war in American history. This stuff doesn't go back. So anything that they can stoke people's fear with and take an inch, they're going to take that much and more. So none of that's going to change as long as we allow it to go on. the keeping these people in office is just going to continue this process, continue us down this terrible road. We're almost $30 trillion in debt amidst so many other problems. And it shows no signs of slowing down with the people we got in there.
Sure, sure. Absolutely. So you bring up some issues. Obviously, you know, the theme of this show over the last year has really, I mean, we really have beat this COVID issue to death, but I think it's the issue of our time, right? I mean, you know, I've dealt with a lot of really crazy shit in the 38 years I've been alive, almost 39 years I've been alive, you know, between the endless wars and you know, the war on drugs and the bailouts and the Patriot Act. And I don't see anything that's more tyrannical than what we've dealt with over the last 2 years during COVID. I mean, it's just been horrendous. And so how could we not bring it up on this show? But I mean, you know, so going into the Senate, going into the House, let's talk about it. I mean, what do you think as a libertarian, what do you think you can accomplish there should you get elected, especially, you know, involving this COVID stuff? I mean, what are you going to start pushing for as soon as you get in there?
You know, it's actually funny because somebody threw an answer to a question at me, and I didn't give, a good enough answer on this on a live stream I was doing maybe a week or so ago. And one of the things I think what we need to be able to do is actually to reassert or to assert some of the constitutional guarantees. In particular, I say when we have, you know, guarantee to be secure in our life, liberty, and property, or that our life, liberty, and property – oh man, the words are all a jumble right now.
That's okay, buddy. I get it, dude. It's a Monday, right?
But without due process, you know, and in particular, emphasize that liberty. You know, the idea that people would be, and again, here in Florida, we've been pretty fortunate. Even if I say it's not necessarily because the folks in our state government are necessarily so committed to liberty, but they've been on the right side of this issue by and large. So I'm thankful for that. But in other states where you guys have had, you know, more serious kind of lockdowns and perpetual stuff, you know, the idea that anyone would be getting in trouble for leaving their house at the wrong time of day and all this sort of stuff, to me, that's a pretty clear violation of liberty. Because if you said, again, where do you draw the line? If I say you can't leave your house at all, that's basically house arrest.
Right.
That's clearly a violation of someone's liberty. So if you restrict it, you know, again, if you justify it with fear of a disease, it's doesn't make it more constitutional. The constitutional requirement is due process if you're going to violate someone's life, liberty, or property. So I think maybe reasserting a little bit more of that is something we can do through legislation, at least at a bare minimum. One of the things to try to do, again, it probably won't happen overnight, would be defunding the agencies that are a part of this, stuff like OSHA. If you can abolish it, obviously even better. But if you can find the support for that, I don't know that you'd be able to find that with enough people yet.
I know a couple of industries that would be totally cool with you abolishing OSHA, buddy.
Oh, absolutely.
Every construction worker in the world would be like, yeah, hell yeah, abolish that shit right now, buddy.
But, you know, it's madness, the fact that we've got these agencies in the federal government that that try to subvert and get involved in stuff that really, again, they don't have the subject matter expertise for. Or if they do, it's because then they have a vested interest in tipping the scales one way or the other. It's always been this way. And all of these government agencies are run by folks with agendas, which are, again, not to be these perfect angels that just want to make everything perfect. And even if they did want that, they wouldn't have the knowledge to do it, because nobody has the knowledge about every unique circumstance that can exist. So just get them out of the way. Just get them out of the way and allow people to work some of these things out. It's cliche for us, the whole idea that good ideas don't require force. You don't need someone hanging over the head. And plus, just in general with regulatory agencies, I think this is one of the things where it really flips on its head some of our core principles, you know, core American principles. And as much as there is such a thing, one of those being the presumption of innocence, instead where you have regulatory agencies, it's all flipped over your head. If you exist as a company doing this, that, or the other thing, well, now you need to prove that you're not guilty of this crime, but we're going to assume that you are if you don't prove that you're doing what we say you should be doing. And it obviously it compounds the cost of everything, and it just imbalances things, creates inefficiency where it's not necessary. Overall, weighing us down and diminishing the you know, the ability to improve our quality of life, because so many resources are sapped from everything else productive to go into this realm. One thing I did was thinking of, though, as we were talking about, the interesting thing about what's gone on with COVID, though, is the fact that it has had such a widespread impact where everybody's impacted. And it's one of these things where we know a lot of things that impact everyone. We can talk about taxation and some of these other things that, you know, it's like the cliche, only thing for sure is death and taxes, right?
Right, right.
But you know, I think there are other things that are more egregious. I think when you talk about like what has been the effects of the drug war or the war on terror and wars abroad in general, but those are more focused because those impact certain people, and a lot of people here, myself included, really doesn't feel so much of a direct impact, except for, you know, obviously the inflation, the waste of money, the national debt and everything. That's what we experience over here. But it's nothing like, obviously, people who are getting killed. I mean, a guy, as we were withdrawing from Afghanistan, it was a guy and his family, 7 kids.
Right.
He was like 9 people. Trying to think the guy's name, Zemirai Ahmad or something.
Sounds like a man after my own heart, though, with seven kids, you know.
You know, man, it's interesting how that works in terms of and it doesn't sort of line up with what you might assume in terms of where we get into these societies where everything is so plentiful versus people that are really struggling in the world in places where there's legitimate hardship. But yeah, no, man, be fruitful and multiply.
Yes. I'm trying to repopulate the entire liberty movement by myself.
Hey, man, all the more reason why we got to raise them up and teach them right. I just warmed my heart so much. It was last year sometime when my son was when we were obviously that we were everybody was hunkered down because of. Or actually, no, this was probably
2020.
This was probably 2020. Yeah. Now I think about it, it's all a haze, man.
Yeah, dude.
But once I started,
it's all together. Like 2020 and 2021 are all 1 year to me.
Yeah, and I had already started working from home. The kids had started having to do a little bit of school remotely and stuff. And I remember my son arguing with the teacher about taxes, that it's still theft, no matter what they use it for. It doesn't matter. They're still taking it. And it just warmed my heart to hear that. Actually, my son went out with me when you were having the debate, the chair debate at the 2020 convention.
Although with Joe Bishop Hinchman, that was a fun debate. I really had a good time at that one.
So he went out with me to that. My daughter, who turned 12 a little bit ago, went with me to the first night at the Florida convention as well, and was really stoked about things. So I'm, you know, trying as much as I can.
Where
you
was
know,
2020 at? Was that Miami?
2020 was here. Orlando.
Was it Orlando? God, I went to the first one I ever went to was Fort Walton Beach, dude.
Oh, no, I'm talking about the, the
National
National convention was Orlando.
Right.
Our state convention was in Lakeland. So it's a bit further west, not quite all the way to Tampa, but in that sort of central west.
Because I went to 2020 as well. I know that. It was the 2021 is the only one that I missed, I think. I'm pretty sure.
Yeah. Gosh, wait, 2020. Man,
No, I think 2021 was the Lakeland one.
Yeah, 2021 was Lakeland.
Yeah.
2020 I missed because 2020 was on my son's birthday.
Okay.
That's why.
but 2020 was the one that I had the chair debate, though.
No, but...
Oh, you're talking about the national chair debate.
At National, yeah.
Oh, that
at
was national. A blast.
So it was you, JBH, and I don't know how many other guys.
Yeah, there was me, JBH.
Shipley.
Yep. Yeah, that was a fun... That was probably the most fun debate I've ever had because we own the room. Like because remember half that convention was online and we owned the room. I mean, the room was ours and people were just screaming and chanting, "Break the cycle." I was like, this is the greatest thing. And this was before I had done the show, right? Because that was for you, those who don't know, "Break the cycle" was my campaign slogan before I ever did the show. And so people were just screaming, "Break the cycle" for like 5 minutes after the debate was even over, they were still doing it. I was like, I felt like a rock star, man. It was great.
Yeah, man. It was a cool thing. That convention though, man, I just remember that first day that was completely wasted on all the whole thing with the online and all. Gosh, it's the kind of stuff that makes me really, and I know you've been on the LNC for a while as a at large, and I appreciate, you know, obviously what you do and obviously Steven Nikaila, who's my region rep, who I think are good folks, but on the whole, unfortunately, I haven't had a real good sense of what the LNC does and everything. And it's not very inspiring to me. It's the sort of thing that has kind of led me off into, and I guess in this case, we're not talking just the LNC. We're talking about the party nationally.
Right.
Just kind of leads me to focus on things closer to home. When I was in Miami, obviously I was focused on stuff down there. Since I came up here, pretty soon after coming up here, I decided I was going to try this, take a shot here. And so that's kind of my focus, in as much as doing stuff with the party, see as much as I can get around, try and do some things, leverage what I can of my own skills and get the message out there, and hopefully reach out to people, start to build something up. But, you know, it's one step at a time.
Sure. Well, I've been kicking around the idea of running against Cindy Axne here for Congress. She's the only Democrat congressperson in Iowa, and I happen to live in her district. And one of my things was I was going to bring forth a motion at every year that I'm in Congress. I would bring forth a motion to end all foreign wars and start closing military bases. And that would be basically my entire platform. I mean, that's what I was going to run on. I thought it'd be a strong thing here in Iowa. There's a lot of people who want to get out of wars in Iowa, because, you know, Ron Paul did good in Iowa, of all the states. If you were to go into the Senate, would you be fighting these wars, man? Would you be fighting, pushing back against these endless wars?
Look, and I was inspired by the Ron Paul message, and that's obviously one of those big things. This is one of those things where people think it's so, it's interesting to me where people who came from the Ron Paul movement or who were inspired by that have now sort of morphed into really focusing on localism. And I don't say there's anything wrong with it. Obviously, like, sure. I said, I ran first to run for something really local. But if we think about some of the issues, what was the issues that inspired you when that was going on? What were the issues? The end to all the wars.
Yep.
Obviously, it's something, it's not even a question. Zero of all these wars and military engagements are declared wars. So bring them home.
Right.
Bring them home. Bring them all home. And with the insane spending and everything else that goes along with it, stop, you know, getting people killed in the crossfire, stop sacrificing these young men and women who, even if they come home alive, they come home with carrying a burden, you know, that the rest of us can't really appreciate. I mean, I'm intellectually, I can understand that they're dealing with something, but I don't really understand what you guys who are out there actually dealt with and what you carry with you. I know that there's something there, but I couldn't tell you this. I couldn't explain it the same way you could. And even explaining it is not the same thing. You know, it's like having a kid. It's like your first day being a parent. Nobody else can explain it to you, I think. And of course our monetary system, the Federal Reserve, this is not stuff we can address locally. These are things we need to attack that power structure, and at least give it a shot. You know, we sit here and we go on about how Republicans suck and Democrats suck.
Hold on. I lost you, buddy. I lost you. You still there?
Peek on from the website, missagoy.com. /issues.
Sorry, I lost you. Something happened. I boomered the audio. I boomered the video, but we're back. We were talking about the Fed. We started talking about the Fed. I got excited. My hands started shaking. That's what happened.
But no, man. But you know, I've got at least some of my takes on these issues, in particular with foreign policy. Like I say, bring them all home. Quit all the crazy spending. Cut the foreign aid as well. We shouldn't be meddling. Again, it's real simple, and it's not isolationism. It is normal relations, free trade with everyone, even the people we don't like, because you're not going to have any influence anywhere. You're not going to be able to actually make a positive impact in places by doing the stuff we've done. And if there's any better example of it, I think should be Afghanistan, in a really different roundabout way from what happened in Vietnam. Obviously, what drove the U.S. out of Vietnam and made people very gun shy about it was the loss of human life.
Hi, kids. Do you like violence? Are you sick to death of pussyfooting around the truth while being constantly fed lies by news and big tech tyrants? If so, then come join me, Dan Smotz, on The System Is Down, where we get weird, have fun, and dig into all the dangerous taboo topics like conspiracies, politics, religion, culture, current events, and everything your family just prays you don't bring up around the Thanksgiving dinner table. And I know that reality is scary to some people, so if you're easily offended, just ignore this and go back to making cat memes or whatever. But if you're ready to change the world for the better, come join me on The System Is Down at tsidpod.com or wherever you get podcasts. That's tsidpod.com, because the system is down and truth is taking over.
And we didn't have that now because it's just a different kind of warfare. The technological difference, the advantages that we have didn't lend itself to that. But what still happened? We spent 20 years, probably at least a couple trillion people dead in the both the locals and some of our troops dead, along with the folks who came back. Like I said, carrying that burden, many driven to suicide. We're talking about at all-time highs for both veterans and active duty in terms of what's been recorded in the past. And all of that sacrifice over 20 years, and the Taliban took back over in a week. Literally within a week.
I don't even think it was a week.
Yeah, no.
I think it was 4 days, 5 days or something like that.
But it's absurd. And it's, you know, when you think of all of that sacrifice and everything, unfortunately, I guess maybe one of the problems we have is we have such short memories now where I don't think there's a full appreciation for that in the general public. And maybe it's part of, you know, fixation on the COVID fears and everything else. But, and this is one thing also I'll say about with the COVID stuff, because again, as important as I think it is, and to address it, I always am afraid that people are going to get this idea, well, if we could just go back to the way things were in 2019 and everything would be just perfectly fine. And, you know, we still had a lot of problems in 2019.
Right.
You know, even before the CARES Act and all this stuff, we were still running trillion-dollar deficits and, you know, the crazy drone warfare and occupations abroad and everything else. All this stuff was still going on. We still have so many of these things going on. And again, it's trying to impress upon people the problem isn't any one thing. We have so much work to do. And it boils down to what I always try to explain to people. It boils down to a fundamental difference between us and them, us libertarians and the mainstream of politics, or the Republicans and Democrats. And I guess you could lump in the other sort of additional parties as well, because they seem to fall into this. I saw what the Green Party put out maybe a month or so ago regarding COVID stuff. And it boils down to, where do you think or the legitimacy of government power?
Right.
You know, they seem to follow this kind of old world, you know, mandate of heaven that government is just, you know, anointed to control everything, and it has legitimate authority to decide everything about your life. And their arguments are merely about whether they should or shouldn't do this or that. It's not about, you know, any sort of, there's no question to them whether it's legitimate or they have proper authority to do it. For us, it's very different. And I would say somewhat more in line with, you know, the American tradition of thinking that government's power needs to come from the people. Because if government's power comes from the people that are being governed, you know, this is what power can I vest in government? Only that power which I have. I have the right to defend myself, to protect my family, my property, etc., and my own life. Not really much else. I don't have, you know, permission to, you know, take whatever percentage of your income and go spend it on something else. I don't have legitimate authority to tell you what plants you can grow or substances you can consume or objects you can own, et cetera, et cetera. So if we don't have that authority or mandate what kind of safety policies can be in your workplace, since we were talking about OSHA before, and if I don't have that authority, how can I vest that authority in government?
Right.
Where can it come from? So it's a core difference that is something where people need to understand their basic rights, how it's infringed upon, and what the damage that it does. Because it's, I usually approach things from a perspective of principle of saying, you know, this is wrong because it violates, you know, the individual's rights in this way or the other. But I think the consequences, when you look at later on down the road, when you look at what the actual consequences of these policies end up being, they still end up bearing out the same thing. So I think when you violate those principles, it's pretty much impossible to create a positive outcome when you violate those principles of individual liberty. You're setting up a situation where it's inevitable that there's going to be unintended consequences that are going to be harmful, and you're probably never even going to accomplish or even get closer to accomplishing the goal that you at least stated that you wanted to with the policy.
Sure. So you know, here we go again. I don't know what's doing this with my video. Is like my video shrinks like during shows. All of a sudden, it's got these black lines on it. I don't know why it does that. I'm gonna figure it out. Maybe it's a bad cord.
Use a great camera, man, because I know at least with mine, because I'm using my own phone and a piece of software on there to use that as the webcam.
Yeah.
Through my PC and everything. But sometimes if it doesn't pick up that I have the license, it'll shoot down my resolution. It'll throw like a watermark on top of my picture and everything. So
no, I use a Canon M50, man, and I have the Canon it's the Canon webcam app that they put out so that you can use your camera with clean HDMI out and all that shit. And I don't know, it just started happening recently, and sometimes the black bars on the side are really thin and sometimes they're thick, and I'm not changing any settings. It's just happening on its own. So I really got to dig in and find out what's going on with that, man. So we know that there's not a lot of really good liberty people in Senate. Okay. There's not. there's a couple that do some good things. Okay, obviously, yeah. The apple didn't, you know, the apple fell pretty far from the tree for Rand, but Rand does really good things sometimes. Go ahead.
It's a funny thing with Rand. You know, I think a lot of us who were really hardcore, you know, lovers of Ron Paul have been very disappointed because of, you know, how much he wasn't that. But in truth, you know, if I stop and think about it realistically, it's unfair to expect anyone to be a carbon copy of their parent. You know, it's not a fair expectation to put on him. And yeah, I can say that, you know, when I'm really frustrated with stuff that he does, or I don't like certain things, or I just disagree with him, or I think he's way off the rails. But at the same time, I got to give him credit when he does good stuff, you know, and the stuff that he's done, you know, taking Fauci to task, at least, you know, on the Senate floor about the gain of function research and everything, that's invaluable. And I'm thankful that he's there doing that. And some things and he surprised me occasionally in positive ways as well. But yeah, you know, we don't have I don't think libertarians, folks who are, like I say, committed to these principles, I don't think we have anyone that we can rely on in right. the Senate today.
There might be some allyship on issues, I'd imagine, which would be nice. And you know, I don't think people understand. There's, you know, there's this thing where people are like, oh, you know, you'd have to get a whole bunch of libertarians elected to the House to make a difference. That's not true. You only need one. And let me tell you why you need one, because then both sides are going to have to start coming to you asking for your vote on things. You know what I mean? It starts to change the dynamic of the House. And I think, you know, I think Amash, you know, I'm not the biggest Amash fan, but I think he did some really good things, and he, you know, he's very principled on almost everything, probably 99% of things he's principled on. Mm-hmm. So he, you know, I'm not going to throw the baby out with the bathwater for the things I disagree with him about, but
yeah,
he made a difference in Congress, in my opinion, because, you know, he was the one that stood up and made the noise, and people had to come and ask him to support things. And so it does make a difference when you have people like Amash and Massey, who I'm a huge fan of, who I agree with also probably on 95% of things. And but it could really make a difference. Getting one elected can make a huge difference in the House. And so I you know, you have my endorsement, Dennis. Obviously, you know that already, man. As long as you're not running against Augustus Invictus, you got my endorsement, dude.
You know, that was, gosh, man, that's such a funny thing. I think back to that particular election cycle, and in a sense, it was kind of cool that we had a Senate primary.
Right.
Libertarians had a Senate primary, which was so bizarre.
Had picked any shittier candidates, though, buddy?
Well, you know, it wasn't that we picked them. You know, we had this one guy who, you know, which was an interesting character, to say the least. We actually, and this is actually an interesting point because it's something I've talked about with a few other people recently. You know, that led to a lot of upheaval in the state party. There was a lot of people who were really bent out of shape because this guy showed up. He registered as libertarian. He ran as a libertarian. And a lot of people were just wanted to run this guy to the party. And others of us just said, well, let's just trust the process. Other people got another guy who was basically an empty suit.
Right. What was his Paul name Stanton. Again? That guy hates me. Paul Stanton. That's Paul right. Stanton. He hates Paul me. Stanton.
Yeah. He was basically an empty suit from, in my humble opinion. I mean, I met him. He seemed like a vaguely intelligent guy, but he has really poor judgment in my opinion. But he basically an empty suit. The guy wasn't really like charismatic or anything. And he won the primary with like 70 something percent because nobody liked the other guy. So the process worked. Yeah. And eventually he was gone from the party. Other colorful characters that we had that people got all upset about and been out of shape, they left the party. And I think Florida as a party is pretty strong, at least in the sense we get along. We don't have quite this level of internal conflict that I see at the national level. So this is one of my hopes for the national party is that maybe past this convention, maybe we'll get past this. The folks who really want to cry and say we're going to leave or this and that will leave if they're going to leave. And folks who stay, regardless of what side they fall on, if they're serious about getting work done, they'll work together, whether it's old guard, new guard, or whoever.
Sure.
You know, that. So I'm hopeful that sort of something similar to that will happen in the state. At national level, because I think at the state level, we've had that happen in Florida. And at least my experience from the first convention I was at to the more recent ones, and just my interactions with everybody in general has been so much more positive. And so, you know, I'm hopeful to see something like that happen at the national level.
It's growing pains. We'll see. That's what happens. It's normal. We got to have these debates to iron out what we're going to be, what our identity is going to be as a party. I mean, you know, a lot of people talk about how, you know, the Libertarian Party's been around for 50 years and they haven't gotten anything done. It's like 50 years in the grand scheme of things is not a lot, dude. Like, it's not a lot of years. You know what I mean? And I think that there's been this battle for the soul of the party for a long time. You know, you had the cases, you had the Cato Mises split between Rothbard and the Koch brothers way back when. And, you know, and then that wing of liberty kind of took it over for a while. And then now the Mises wing is like taking it back over. And so I think if we could kind of iron out this, you know, this identity for the Libertarian Party, I think they could be really, you know, active and get a lot of things accomplished. And I think that's where we're getting to. And I think a lot of the riffraff that kind of just came in so that they had these little positions, you know, that made them feel important so they could write on their blogs about what they do as, you know, these libertarian positions. I think that those people are going to walk away. I do. I think, you know, we've already seen a lot of them walk away. People like Andy Craig, who really just stuck around and talked shit to people all the time. He didn't really do, in my opinion, anything important. He was on the platform committee and all these committees, and it was like, that's great. What are you doing in the real world? You know what I mean? And so when those people walk away, I'm not going to cry. I'm not going to cry about it. I'm going to be like, I'm going to sayonara. We got shit to do now that we're not constantly fighting on these boards. And so that, you know, that's my hope. And, you know, that was my hope in 2017 when I started running, was like, hey, I wanted to unite with people that were good faith actors. And people who were principled as well. You know, my two runs really highlighted who were the not good faith actors and who were not principled and who was just here for the small pond. And so, you know, even if I never do anything else, I know I accomplished that inside the party, but I think, you know, it's time for a lot of these guys to start working, you know, outside of their little bubbles anyways, man. But, we're getting close to the end of this thing, but let's, before we go. So you have something in common with Mitt Romney. You are Mormon and so I want to talk a little bit about how, you know, your faith has kind of shaped your political views and stuff as well, because we talk about faith on the show quite a bit with some other characters and stuff, but it's not, you know, a faith that I've had on the show, so it's kind of exciting to talk about. So has that helped shape your political views and principled views?
Sure. Yeah. You know, I think it's actually funny. There's a clip I would go, and I probably have it saved somewhere in like my some YouTube playlist that I might throw in somewhere, which was like a clip where both Ron Paul and an old church leader, Ezra Taft Benson, who had actually worked also for a time in the Eisenhower administration, but we're both quoting Bastiat, or both talking about Bastiat and the law and stuff. And so, but no, the, you know, sort of the core fundamentals, at least of my faith, and I'm a convert. I joined the church. I got baptized in my early 20s. So it's not the, it's not necessarily the religion I grew up with. It's the religion I chose, but, or I even to say not even chose, but I came to have a testimony of a faith in, and so, or a recognition of the truth of, if I'm going to say it that way, if I want to be a little more bold about it. But, you know, part of the theology, even just the most basic stuff, we talk about the plan of salvation. One of the things we talk about as a core principle is that, humanity's free agency. We don't believe in things like being accountable for original sin, that you're condemned for something that someone else did. You're responsible for your own actions, which is pretty much in line with libertarianism. Also, the idea that we're supposed to be here, we're given our freedom. Literally, we talk about the this war in heaven prior to our existence here. We believe that our spirits existed prior to this. And so when we, the plan that we're going through, the process that we're going through, part of it is to come to the earth and receive bodies and have our freedom to be able to make choices, to learn. We make mistakes, but as we sin, we have the atonement of Jesus Christ to be able to redeem ourselves. But it is freedom is a key component to this, where literally what the plan of Satan, I can't rephrase this any other way. The plan of Satan literally was send everybody to earth with no free will and force everybody to be good,
right.
Which to me honestly sounds like a lot of what people want to do with government, force everybody to be good, force everybody to do the right thing, which is really does not allow people to grow, does not allow people to reach their potential. When people are not free, people are at their best when they're free. That's been what I've observed. There's also just in terms of this idea, maybe of a liberty sort of minded governance in the very early days of the church, the 1840s, the church was so early history of the church before the church actually gets out into Utah and settling out there. The church is actually established in the Northeast. They're migrating a bunch, bouncing around between a couple different places. In the 1840s, they settled in a place in Western Illinois called Nauvoo. And at the time there, the first prophet of the Restoration, Joseph Smith, he's also serving as the mayor there. And there's this great quote where a reporter asked him, you know, how do you govern your people? Because he observed that things were running pretty smoothly over there. And he said, I teach them correct principles and they govern themselves.
Nice.
And I think to me, that's the ideal, right. You know, is not a situation where we're going to, you know, again, what we see so much of today, where people are trying to this top down decision making for people, for regular people that they don't understand, they don't know. Instead, we believe in teaching folks and allow them to make these choices. Now, it might seem a little strange to have this emphasis on liberty when you think about a faith that, you know, I think from the outside people view as having a lot of constraints. You know, the fact that I don't drink, don't smoke, I don't even drink coffee.
You right, know, like no caffeine, right? Do you drink any caffeine at all?
I mean, I take Excedrin, which has caffeine.
I would die.
It's not technically a prohibition on caffeine. There's this some folks sort of push it to another level and get into this whole thing with soda and caffeine-free soda. But that's not really doctrinal per se. So I not that I want to start any fights with other folks in church or whatever, but you know, some folks are kind of more about that. Some folks drink soda and it's whatever.
Nice.
But you know, but there's restrictions, but it's stuff that we choose, and it's that important part that you choose to do this. There's even some other stuff in there where without going off in too much of the time, where people might view it as being more aligned with some other kind of political views. But voluntarism is key. We choose to do this. We make that decision and everything. Gosh, I can't remember where it's from, but this other quote, I think it was from some old hymn or something, but something about that God will force no man to heaven, right. You know? And so I think freedom is core to it. Going back to when I was talking about with Ron Paul always made a big emphasis. And it's one of the things where I'm kind of, not quite on board with everybody who wants to get into the whole secession movements and stuff, because I do think that the Constitution is valid.
You get a phone call?
It's not a phone call. It's an alarm that I have set for normally, because I'm not usually doing this at this time of day. So, but gosh, what is it? You know, Ron Paul always made a big emphasis on the U.S. Constitution. I know there's, and I understand the Lysander Spooner kind of viewpoint of, well, the Constitution really hasn't succeeded in anything. The Constitution's papers, words on a piece of paper.
Right.
You know, right. We in our church, we view the Constitution as being kind of inspired. I mean, me in particular, I look at the Bill of Rights. And, you know, we can talk about individual rights and life, liberty, property in a way that, and understand that. The average person isn't so engaged in politics and they don't get it. But, you know, simple things like, say, freedom of speech, freedom of religion, right to bear arms, due process. People understand that. That's relatively easy for folks to grasp. And I think even if you think, and I understand the attitude of, hey, our federal government sucks and it's not a
so
it's
bad.
Not an ally at all. And I can understand wanting to get away from that. But if you compare what we've had here versus the growth of government almost anywhere else in the world, you know, I look at the Constitution as kind of an anchor that the federal government has been dragging as it can to go into the direction of statism as fast as it could. But, you know, I think it has value. I think it does represent something. And heck, I mean, we've got scriptures literally in terms of the Book of Scripture, Modern Revelations, a book called Doctrine and Covenants. We have a little bit of extra scripture, as you might already know.
Just a few.
And one of the revelations is like, you know, the laws which are not, I don't have it in front of me, but laws which are not constitutional and not upholding the freedom of men is, you know, is, oh gosh, I can't remember the term now. But, you know, evil and usurpation and things of that nature. And so I wish I'd had it pulled up. I should have done that since we talked a little bit about this before.
That's okay. You don't got to get it verbatim, buddy. That's all right.
You know, like I said, I joined as an adult, never did the whole master scriptorian thing, seminary growing up or anything. So I usually just depend on technology to save all my stuff. So, and try to have it a little more handy when I go into these conversations, but I think those are core beliefs of ours. The fact that individual liberty is important, not only important, it's essential for salvation. It's essential because how can we grow and become what we need to be if we're not free?
Right.
And obviously the respect for life in a lot of ways as well. The wars that we talk about, I think the value of every individual life is truly something precious. And so it is another thing where I find it really morally indefensible the way that we've gone to war unnecessarily. And it's the sort of thing where, in particular, you know, we go back since we mentioned Romney, you know, when he was running for president, and at the same time, obviously, Ron Paul was running for president. Excuse me. You know, the sort of stuff that they threw out as far as foreign policy to me is just indefensible, you know, to be willing to and to not just continue the wars that we already had, but to be willing to threaten to use this or that kind of force, you know, to start with Iran, you know, because Iran's attacked us, you know, the U.S. so many times, you know, maybe something we have right around their borders in their waters and whatever. But, you know, some of these guys are so hungry for war and all this stuff. And to me, again, also from that standpoint of valuing human life as well, it's not something I can get behind. Obviously, it's something that I feel very strongly against. And I think that, you know, we just need to pull the plug. And obviously, like I said, if I get elected, it's not going to happen overnight still. But to your point about that, you know, the first step is the first step. We're not going to get the second step without the first step. We got to break through that. We got to break through that wall and demonstrate, because this is also the thing. What do we always hear from people? Oh, I'll vote for them once the party's viable. How are we gonna be viable if they never vote for us? You know, it's the thing like when you go looking for a job the first time, you know, you need experience to get the job, but you need the job to get experience.
Right.
You know, so
yep.
We need to become viable to get elected, we need to get elected to become viable. So
it really is a double-edged sword, man. Absolutely.
Yeah.
100%. Before we move on, we are getting close to the end here, but I want to give a shout out to all the people that have come over from the Mises Caucus stream. I know that Michael Heiss and Angela and one of my favorite people, Aaron Harris, one of my favorite people in the world, were having a stream to kind of address the vice chair situation. When Dennis gets going here in a second, I'll kind of wrap some of the stuff I heard in the first hour of that before I started my show. I'll wrap some of that up, give you guys a couple of little things, but I am doing a Q&A from this channel on Wednesday. It'll be a Zoom Q&A, so you guys can pop into the Zoom. It'll be broadcast to this channel if you don't want to be a part of the Zoom. So just so you guys know, but let's, before we go, sorry, and I've been sick, so I'm getting a little better. And if you guys hear me snorting and coughing and my throat's a little dry, but I want to address some of these super chats before we take off. Dave Benner, who will be my guest tomorrow night, thanks for the $5 super chat. He said, nice beard, and use this paltry donation to get some more states on your vice chair campaign. LOL. Yes, sir, I will. Shannon Lee, $5 super chat. Thank you. She said, born and raised in Miami. Keep up the great work. I'm up in Panama City now, but love to see you kicking ass. Need more libertarians down here. Shannon will be voting for Dennis, right? Right, Shannon? Right? Kenneth Wiley. Oh, Ken Wiley. What's up, buddy? $5 super chat. That's another one. That's another one of those Florida libertarians that I respect Ken Wiley a great deal. I really like that guy a lot. He said, Marco Rubio is the Eric Swalwell of the Senate. Only smart enough to repeat what he's told to say, except that Marco Rubio has never ripped ass on national television. So, and Eric Swalwell definitely did. And then the last one, I want to get to this. Medic Knight, $10 super chat. Thank you. Dennis, who do you think the Democrats will nominate for the Senate in Florida?
The odds-on favorite is Congresswoman Val Demings. She's in the U.S. Congress here. I think it's the 10th District, but nearby actually where I'm at now, out of Orlando, Orange County. She's been in there for a few years. She's actually – it's sort of entertaining because even Marco Rubio banged her on the fact that she's – you know, I think in the last session of Congress, she voted literally 100% of the time with Nancy Pelosi.
Oh, good. That's what Florida needs.
That's talk about representing your constituents versus representing your, you know, your colored team
party.
It's more about winning a Senate seat for Team Blue than it is about really anything to do with the folks here. She has long history as a police chief and stuff as well. They're interesting. You know, it's funny because I look at her stuff and it is, you know, almost entirely, if it's not ragging on Marco Rubio for something, it is, here's my story, but there's no policy. Like literally you go to the website and there's no policy. So, and I guess that's the luxury of running for one of the big parties where you can do that. Cause it doesn't really matter.
Right.
You know, it's just, hey, they got a D next to their name.
They got built in voters, dude, no matter what,
you know, but you know what, I try to harp on this stuff. You know, she, just like Marco Rubio, voted to give another $750 billion to the $750 billion to the military industrial complex within the last month or two.
Those anti-war Democrats, dude, you know?
Yeah, you know, and of course, not to be outdone, of course, they included in that, I believe, was a, I know some stuff got stripped out of it, but I believe that there's still a red flag law for the military that got snuck in there in that NDAA. Marco Rubio, by the way, the Republican, of course, is constantly submitting red flag laws nationally in the Senate. He's like sponsoring them. I think at least each of the last few years has been sponsoring national red flag legislation. So go figure that. All the people who were, you know, Second Amendment, hopefully we can get something going here.
Well, I got guns. But, I got guns bigger than Marco Rubio. So I get it, dude. I know. How it goes. Anyway, He's probably scared. Well, brother, I'm a big fan. You definitely have my endorsement. There's no doubt about that. You're an old school Ron Paul libertarian. Support ending the Fed. Support ending the wars, the drug wars. You're really attacking the correct issues. You definitely have my full endorsement. Brother, where can these wonderful people that watch my show and listen to my show find you, support you, help you out, do all these great things, man?
So here we go. We've got the URL that's been here at the bottom all this time. I'm going to put another URL right up here. It says missigoy.com/donate. You can go right there. If you just want to hurry up and get to it, go to the donate page. Anything you can do, have the kind of preset what the limits are and everything. So you can go ahead and donate. Every cent counts. It makes a difference in terms of being able to reach folks and message and even just ensure our position there. Nothing is guaranteed here. So I'm trying my best to give us an opportunity. I think it's important for us, particularly here in Florida, where, you know, this race is probably going to be one of the most high profile ones this coming year, or this year. Actually, no, it's 2022 now. So this year, this is going to be one of those high profile races, because you got Rubio as a former presidential nominee, or not nominee, but presidential candidate, and Val Demings, who was pretty big in the Veep stakes for Biden last year, or not last year, in 2020. So I got to reorient myself. It's this whole thing. Happy New Year, everybody.
Yeah, Happy New Year. COVID, I'm telling you, 2020 and 2021 were all 1 year because of COVID. That's how it works.
Trying to give folks an alternative to all of that. Like I said, nothing's guaranteed here. But here in Florida, we have the opportunity. I think we should have liberty in the conversation. That's what I want to do. I don't want us to sit it out if we don't have to. Sure. So I'm willing to put myself up there. I'm not asking anything more of anyone than I'm willing to do myself. So I'm putting myself out here. If you guys can, like I say, I'll throw it back up here just for the sake of it. You know, come on, visit me here at the URL. I'm going to try to get out at a few events, trying to be down in Broward on Friday night, maybe in Volusia County on Saturday. We'll see. That was my plan. So, but visit the website, particularly if you're out of state or whatever, but you want to help out, please go there. Whatever you get, whatever I'm so tied up. It's too late in the day. If you can contribute what you can. Like I said, every little bit helps and allows us to get one step closer to putting that voice of liberty in the conversation, to be able to compete with these guys. You know, we know that we're never going to have the same amount of resources that they have, but I don't believe we need that. I think we live in an exciting time. And I've heard you and some of the other guys talk about it. You know, this is what's different from here versus, you know, back when Ron Paul was running in 88, you know, there was none of this where I could say, hey, you're interested in my campaign, go to this website. No, the only way I could give you my platform would be, I have to print it out on paper and give it to you. I have to mail you a form or something like that for you to know where to donate. That's not the world we live in anymore. Now we have the means by which to connect with folks. So, but we still do need some resources to be able to get into the conversation and to compete. Not as much as they do, because we have the message.
Sure.
We have the principles, and it's a matter of connecting with folks and delivering that. And we see where it goes from there. You know, I recognize that, as I like to say, it would take a miracle, but miracles happen.
They do happen, brother. They do. And I'll be praying for one. I'll be praying for one with you, brother. And like I said, you got my support. Please go help this man win Senate in Florida and make history by being the first libertarian elected to Senate. I promise you, as free as Florida has been over the last 2 years, because
we can do better.
Yeah, we could do a lot better. And I guarantee you that Dennis is the man to do it. Brother, thank you so much for coming on. I really appreciate you.
Thank you so much for having me, my friend.
Absolutely. All right, guys, another awesome episode of Break the Cycle. Dennis, super cool. I've known him for quite a few years. I'm a big fan. Like I said, he's done something that most libertarians have not. He's been elected already. Now he's running for a much higher office in Senate, where he can make all kinds of wonderful national changes in the liberty sphere. So please see how you can help him. You know, and if you're in Florida, maybe you can help him with some events. Go check him out. Shake the man's hand. I promise you, he is as nice in person as he is on my show. Guys, I just talked about it briefly. I know a lot of you came over here from the Mises Caucus stream with Michael Heiss and Angela McCardle. I'm sure you have a lot of questions. I don't agree with everything they're saying. And I've talked to Mike and Angela both about this. I think that their timelines are wrong. I think that their perception of my work over the last 5 years is wrong. And I'm going to address all this on my Q&A on Wednesday. I've seen a running pros and cons list of myself and Eric Rodsep that came out from some people in the Mises Caucus that is just factually incorrect on a ton of things. But also is it feels a little gaslighting to me. I think that some of the things that I have done for the party are being forgotten. I think that the time that I took off to adjust my family to a new life, from a lot of things. I mean, it wasn't like I was out there trying to get on all these committees and do all these things, because I got 7 kids in 1 year in my house. And so I took a couple of months to kind of relax and figure out how that was going to go. And but I kept up with my duties on the Libertarian National Committee, which was my primary focus, my primary concern in the Libertarian Party, because I took a national position. I was representing all members across the country, and so I needed to continue to do that. And so we can really get into the meat and potatoes of all the stuff, all these gripes that are being passed around about me, that I'm not a guy who can take tasks and do tasks. That's horseshit. I've done a lot of tasks for a lot of people, that I don't show up. That's horseshit. I've been to 45 states for this party and this caucus over the last 4 years. I've done a lot. And so I think that's kind of being pushed under a rug somewhere and forgotten about. And I'm not going to say that it's being done out of a malicious position. I don't want to go to war with my friends in the Mises Caucus. I love those people. Those people have been my really good friends for a long time. The membership, there's a large portion of that membership that I brought into the party, that I brought into the caucus. And I support them, and I support the mission. My main concern is that we support candidates that represent us. And because this is a national level position, this isn't, the vice chair is being made out to be a nothing position. And that's just couldn't be any further from the truth. In fact, in 2017, 2018, when I was running for national chairman against Nicholas Sarwark, at the time there was a vice chair named Arvin Vora, who actually got a ton more media than Nicholas Sarwark did. And so that's a possibility. And I want people in those positions that can end up getting media, that can end up being on podcasts and news and Kennedy and this and that. I want those people to reflect my principles first and foremost. The nuts and bolts of the party is really not that crazy. Okay. It's really not. We're working on a less than $2 million a year budget. There's 4 meetings a year. And there's other things that you can involve yourself in. But it's just not a do-nothing position, and that's a silly assumption to make about the vice chair position. There's a lot to it. They represent the states that are not in regions. It's a big job, and it's something that I know I can do. If I didn't think I could do the vice chair position, I would not be running for vice chair. If I didn't think that I had the ability to not be the top dog and work under somebody, I wouldn't be running for the position. If I didn't think I had the time to do the job, I wouldn't be running for that position. So please, on 1-6, the national holiday, January 6th, I'll be doing a Q&A from this channel at 7:30 p.m. Open to whoever wants to come on. Trolls will be banished forever. So come with your serious questions. I have no problem. I won't shy away from the honest answers to serious questions. I know what my downfalls were over the last 4 years, and they're certainly not what they're being painted as. So please come hang out with me on Wednesday. The Zoom link will be in the event invite on Facebook. So if you want to be a part of that live, you can talk to me and ask me questions through there, or you can come and watch it in the live chat on the YouTube and drop all your wonderful super chat questions that can get answered that way. Totally up to you guys. Coming up tomorrow on the show, my good friend Dave Benner is going to be here. He writes for the 10th Amendment Center. He's an author. He's one of the leaders over there in the Tennessee Mises Caucus. He's an all-around badass historian. I love this guy to death. He's been one of my good friends in the movement for quite some time. I'm super stoked to have him on. It's going to be a great show. We are going to get back to regular shows, hopefully at least 4 a week, maybe 5 again, sometimes 5, sometimes 4, maybe sometimes 3, depending on if I'm traveling for the campaign, because I am getting into starting to travel. In fact, not next weekend, but the weekend after, I'll be in Douglasville, Georgia, for the Georgia Libertarian State Convention. I know I'll be in Missouri, Nebraska, Ohio, Michigan, Minnesota, Florida in February. So I'll be getting to a lot of these conventions as much as I can. The cool thing is if you live in the middle of the country, I'll be driving to those conventions with my family. So you finally get to meet all the kids that I always talk about, and my beautiful, wonderful fiance, who will be, by this time, probably a lot more pregnant than she is now. If you're not aware, we are having another baby sometime around September. I'm very, very excited. She hopes it's a girl. I hope it's another little chunky boy like my son, Mateo. But I'm going to love it either way. Guys, I will see you tomorrow. Oh, wait, we can't go. We didn't talk about sponsors. Go check out my sponsors, toplobster.com, the man, the myth, the legend, my good friend and partner on Break the Cycle, where you can get this great fuck around and find out Lady Liberty hoodie that you see me wearing tonight by using BTC at checkout for a 10% discount. Or you can join the channel membership here on my YouTube under all of my videos by hitting join to also get into the after-hour streams. A lot of these streams have after-hours that you guys aren't aware of. There's like 100 of them there. So there's a whole bunch of content you haven't seen that you can go check out. You can also become a member of the Patreon or the Subscribestar. Get into a private Discord server with a lot of cool people that you see in the chats here and get up to 30% off all of Top Lops' new gear up to 2 weeks before it goes to the general public. So really, really, really good stuff, I promise you guys. And of course, go check out my executive producers of the show, anthemplanning.com, for all your emergency and crisis planning needs. Check them out today. See what they can do for your business, home, or personal life. They're doing a wonderful job that the government has historically sucked at, much cheaper and much more efficiently. Seriously, if you own a business, if your family owns a business, if your brother, mother, sister, anybody owns a business, tell them to go check out anthemplanning.com. You will not be disappointed. I promise you they're going to make your life easier and cheaper. I promise you. Good stuff. Guys, also Reed Parnell. Shout out to Reed Parnell. Became a new executive producer of my show this week at the top Patreon level. The top Patreon level is $2 million a month, and that's to shut me up all social media forever, as long as you're paying that $2 million a month. The losers haven't taken me up on it yet. They